Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and in the next half-hour segment, we're going to continue with a review of some of the background to what has taken place in what used to be Yugoslavia, with a particular emphasis on the extent to which the information that we've been getting here in the U.S. of A. has been fundamentally distorted. I suspect a lot of other Western news coverage has been distorted as well. Let me stress at the beginning of this side also that I do not in any way hold a brief for excesses committed by the Serbs, and there have undoubtedly been plenty of them. However, the Serbians have been unfairly, the Serbs have been unfairly demonized. They are not the aggressors in this conflict, but the victims. And also accounts of their own excesses have been greatly exaggerated. So exactly what they did and didn't do remains something of a question, or should remain something of a question, in the mind of the objective observer. One of the important aspects of the historical background to what's taking place in what used to be Yugoslavia concerns what took place in that ethnically diverse region during the Second World War. The only other historical period in which Croatia had been independent, unquote, from Yugoslavia was during World War II, when the Croatian nationalist movement allied with the brutal fascist government of the Ustashi and basically became one of the most enthusiastic collaborationist states of Nazi Germany in World War II. And the Ustashi committed enormous excesses against the Serbs, killing anywhere from 400,000 to 750,000, depending on the account, and doing so in incredibly brutal fashion. They had throat-cutting contests. Their main concentration camp, the Ustashi's main concentration camp, was Jasenovac, which was a converted brickyard. Instead of gassing the victims were simply herded into the kilns and burned alive. When Croatia became nominally independent again in the 1990s with the assistance of Germany and, to a lesser extent, the United States, essentially, Franjo Tudjman simply recouped the old Ustashi collaborationist regime. This is not to say that all Croats are fascists. I don't want to be misunderstood in that regard. Many Croats fought with the partisans in World War II against the fascists, but the government of the, quote, independent, unquote, Croatia is essentially a recapitulation of the old fascist past, and with the horrors committed against the Serbs in World War II, this had much to do with the reaction on the part of the Yugoslav government to the secession of Slovenia and Croatia and the recapitulation of the old Ustashi collaborationist regime in Croatia. Following articles from the New York Times of October 31st of 1993, this is an article by Stephen Kinzer headlined, Pro-Nazi Legacy Lingers for Croatia. And it's subtitled, Both Pride and Embarrassment in Ustashi. By the way, this also can be found on that very same website. I've read this article on the program before, that website that I quoted on the other side of this tape. www.srpska-mreza.com. That's www.srpska-mreza.com. And again, pro-Nazi legacy lingers for Croatia, both pride and embarrassment in the Ustashi. This article by Stephen Kinzer from the New York Times of October 31st of 1993. At a souvenir stand in Zagreb Central Market, glaring down over key rings, cigarette lighters, and T-shirts, hang portraits of a firm-jawed man in military uniform. He is Ante Pavelić, who headed the pro-Nazi government that ruled Croatia from 1941 through 45. When a photographer tried to take pictures of the souvenir stand one morning recently, he was quickly surrounded by thugs from the criminal syndicate that controls the market. Amid invective and threats, they forced the photographer to open his camera and turn over his film. The episode reflects the combination of pride and embarrassment that many Croatian nationalists feel toward Pavelić's government and the fascist Ustashi movement that he headed. Because tens of thousands of Jews, Serbs, and others in the Ustashi died in the Ustashi death camps, official rehabilitation of the Pavelić government is not possible. Yet, Croats view the Ustashi as an essentially nationalist movement, and recall that until Croatia broke away from Yugoslavia in 1991, the years of Ustashi rule were the only period of independence in Croatia's modern history. They believe that it is unfair to condemn the Ustashi years as purely evil period. President Tudjman reflects this uncertainty. Under his leadership, Croatia has taken several steps that suggest he has sympathy for what the Ustashi did. At the same time, Mr. Tudjman's refusal to condemn the Ustashi legacy helps solidify his support among Croatian nationalists and among rightist Croatian, i.e. Ustashi exiles, who contribute to his political campaigns. Mr. Tudjman decreed that Croatia should adopt a red and white checkerboard coat of arms that closely resembles the symbol of the Ustashi state. That coat of arms is now part of the Croatian flag. It is a symbol almost as hateful as the swastika. This year, the Croatian parliament accepted Mr. Tudjman's recommendation that the country adopt a new currency and call it the kuna, K-U-N-A, which was the name of the national currency in the Ustasha period. Skipping down, Mr. Tudjman has also named at least two former Ustashi officials to government posts. As ambassador to Argentina, he nominated Ivo Rožnika, R-O-G-J-N-I-C-A, who is Ustashi commander in Dubrovnik. A Croatian newspaper recently printed a decree Mr. Rožnika signed in June of 1941. All Jews and Serbs are forbidden to walk in the streets, unquote. The newspaper reported that when reached in Argentina, Mr. Rožnika would say only, "Everything I did in 1941, I would do again," unquote. Under the Croatian constitution, Mr. Tudjman has the right to appoint five people to seats in parliament. One of his appointees was Vinko Nikolic, who was an official in the Ustashi Education Ministry, that's N-I-K-O-L-I-C. In a newspaper interview, he defended the reputation of several Ustashi leaders, including Dito Veternik, K-V-A-T-E-R-N-I-K, who is believed to have signed wartime orders authorizing mass executions. Mr. Tudjman himself has made several statements, both in speeches and in written works, that seem to just suggest a prejudice against Jews and to cast doubt on widely accepted versions of what happened at Ustashi and Nazi death camps. Mr. Tudjman has made no clear effort to disassociate himself from either the Ustashi legacy or sentiments of anti-Semitism. A bomb heavily damaged the Jewish community center in Zagreb 2 years ago. A museum of the Serbian Orthodox Church was bombed a year later. The Serbian museum was bombed before dawn on April 10, 1992. That date was the 51st anniversary of the establishment of the Ustasha state, which included not only most of present-day Croatia, but almost all of what is now Bosnia and Herzegovina. Mr. Tudjman has allowed the renaming of a school in honor of the late Mile Budak, who served the Ustasha government as Minister of Education, Ambassador to Germany, and Foreign Minister. So again, the recouping, for all intents and purposes, of the old Ustashi fascist collaborationist state, one of the things that has inflamed Serb passions as Yugoslavia has been dismantled. And I've spoken about both German and American support for the Ustashi, the next generation of Ustashi, the modern Ustashi, in a number of half-hour segments and programs, including FTR 48 and FTR 147, both available from Spitfire. Another article, again, from that same website, www.srpska-mreza.com, is an article from the Jewish Telegraphic Agency by someone named Vlasta Kovacs, K-O-V-A-C. It's dated January 24th of 1997, and its headline, "Support for Pro-Nazis Shakes Croatian Jews." It's dateline Zagreb, and it reads in part, "Campaigns to revive support for the pro-Nazi fascist Ustasha regime are worrying Croatian Jews. In what struck the community as a particularly sharp blow, two Catholic churches, one in the coastal city of Split and one here in the Croatian capital, celebrated Mass on December 28th in memory of the late president of the Ustasha regime. During the regime, homegrown fascists ruled wartime Croatia as a Nazi puppet state. In addition, in recent months, the nationalism of Croatian President Franjo Tudjman has raised concerns among the Jewish community here about efforts to rehabilitate the Ustasha regime. Tudjman drew fire last year by declaring that he wanted to rebury the bones of Croatian fascists at a Yugoslav-built memorial to the thousands of Jews and Serbs slaughtered at the Ustasha regime's Jasenovac concentration camp." And, skipping down, several newspapers, for instance, ran pieces accusing famed Nazi hunter Simon Wiesenthal of conducting a witch hunt because he sent letters to the Croatian authorities protesting the publication of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion last autumn in Croatia. For months, the notorious anti-Semitic tract has been on the Croatian bestseller lists. So note that in the new, quote, unquote, the quote, new, unquote, Croatia, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, one of the major influences on Hitler's anti-Semitism, is on the bestseller lists. And again, with this, to a large extent, recapitulation of the old Ustasha regime, Serbian passions and fears have been rekindled anew. And bear in mind that 250,000 Serbs were ethnically cleansed from Croatia in 1991 alone, and that approximately 500,000 Krajina Serbs were cleansed in 1995. Some of the best writing on the background of what is taking place in what used to be Yugoslavia is being done by Diana Johnstone, the former European editor for In These Times, and she's been writing, doing some very good writing. She's working on a book about what took place, what is taking place in what used to be Yugoslavia, and she's been writing in Covert Action Quarterly. And in Covert Action Quarterly's issue number 66 from the winter of 1999, she had a very good article about Alija Izbegović. Alija Izbegović is the president of Bosnia, and is being portrayed in the West as sort of a cosmopolitan, multiculturally oriented Muslim. In fact, nothing could be further from the truth. As we're about to see, Alija Izbegović is a Muslim fundamentalist and a Muslim chauvinist. He also, as a young man, was a member of the Hanjar Division, a Bosnian Muslim Waffen-SS division that obviously fought alongside the Nazis. That's discussed in, among other for-the-record segments, the Phony Money Scandal and FTR 147, those available from Spitfire. Again, Covert Action Quarterly's issue number 66 in the winter of 1999 carried an article about Alija Izbegović by Diana Johnstone entitled Alija Izbegović, Islamic Hero of the Western World. This article reads in part as follows, and after a discussion of the view in the West that Alija Izbegović and Bosnia could become sort of a multicultural example for the rest of Europe, and an example in which Muslims and non-Muslims could live together in peace, and how the war there inflamed the passions of these so-called liberals, Diana goes on to comment, quote, Western media, not least those newspaper and television channels, CNN and Arte, devoting the most coverage to the conflict, readily identified idealized Sarajevo with the Bosnian Muslims and the Islam of Western dreams with the person of Alija Izbegović. Any suggestion that Mr. Izbegović might be an Islamic fundamentalist, unquote, could only be dismissed with total incredulity and outrage as blatant Serb propaganda invented to justify aggression and ethnic cleansing. How could the leader of the Bosnian Muslims be an Islamic fundamentalist, unquote, when the Bosnian Muslims were obviously such a model of modern tolerance? Acceptance of Izbegović as the personification of multi-ethnic Bosnia-Herzegovina obscured the fact that the president not only did not represent the population of Bosnia-Herzegovina in all its variety, he did not even represent all the Muslims. And in a footnote, she adds, the fact is noted in the influential book by Laura Silber and Alan Little, Yugoslavia, Death of a Nation. Fikret Abdic, a local hero in the far northwestern corner of Bosnia, received more votes than Izbegović. In an unexplained deal, Abdic, who did not have enough support within the SDA, traded his rightful position as head of the presidency in exchange for naming his man, Alija Deli Mustafić, that's it, as interior minister. Bear with me on some of these names. I'm obviously mispronouncing them. That's also reported by Chris Hedges in the New York Times International Herald Tribune of April 26th of 1996. Continuing, that Izbegović could not be considered the uncontested leader of a unanimous Muslim community, much less of multi-ethnic Bosnia, unquote, is clear from his own published writings. The Islamic Declaration, first distributed in 1970 and republished 20 years later, and Islam Between East and West, first published in the United States in 1984. The Islamic Declaration was a manifesto, a sort of what is to be done addressed to Bosnian Muslims discontented with their condition and status. For Izbegović, it is clear that Muslims cannot be satisfied in a secular order. Quote, Islamic society without an Islamic government is incomplete and impotent. A Muslim in general does not exist as an individual. To live and exist as a Muslim, he must create an environment, a community, a social order. History does not know of a single truly Islamic movement which was not simultaneously a political movement. The 1970 Islamic Declaration was written in the context of a global awakening of the Muslim world, quote, made up of 700 million people possessing enormous natural resources and occupying a geographical area of the first importance, unquote. Again quoting, the time of passivity and peace is gone forever, unquote. The time had come to show the way to, quote, the realization of Islam in all fields of private life of the individual, in the family, and in society, by rebirth of Islamic religious thinking and creation of an Islamic community from Morocco to Indonesia, unquote. Izbegovic singled out two currents within the Muslim community which stood in the way of the political renewal of Islam, the conservatives on the one hand and the modernists on the other. And skipping down, the Islamic Declaration very explicitly rejects the intellectual currents that, notably in Arab countries, have attempted to build modern secular nation-states on the Western model of separation between government and religion. For Muslims, Izbegovic declares, secularism and nationalism are purely negative. He illustrates this with the example of Turkey, a Muslim country ruined in his view by secularism and nationalism. Quote, Turkey as an Islamic country ruled the world. Turkey as a copy of Europe is a third-rate country like 100 others around the world, unquote. What Izbegovic has to say about Turkey is particularly significant in as much as he is himself an heir to a Muslim elite in the Balkans, which consistently opposed efforts by Istanbul to reform the Ottoman Empire in ways that would diminish the privileges traditionally monopolized by Muslims. Under Ottoman rule, only Muslims had the right to own land, to occupy administrative posts, to enter town on horseback, or to wear green, among other things. When Ottoman power was finally driven out of the Balkans by the Serb, Bulgarian, and Greek national liberation movements, all Orthodox Christians and a certain number of South Slav Muslims emigrated to Turkey, where even today they may constitute a lobby nostalgic for the good old days, as well as a potential source of support for the growing Islamic political restoration in Turkey itself. The country which Izbegovic singled out in his, quote, declaration, unquote, as an example and inspiration as our great hope, unquote, is Pakistan. Pakistan constitutes the rehearsal for introduction of Islamic order in contemporary conditions and at the present level of development, unquote. These words were written before the Islamic Revolution in Iran, which brought a new source of financial backing to Izbegovic's project of Islamic revival in Bosnia-Herzegovina. For secular society, however, Pakistan, as example, is no more reassuring, considering its ongoing backing of armed Islamic groups in neighboring countries, notably the Taliban in Afghanistan. Izbegovic's constant message is that the Quran calls for unification of religious faith and politics. There can be no separation of church and state, unquote, a Christian division totally unacceptable to Muslims. The first and most important conclusion to be drawn from the Quran is, quote, the impossibility of any connection between Islam and other non-Islamic systems. There is neither peace nor coexistence between the Islamic religion and non-Islamic social and political institutions, unquote. And again quoting, having the right to govern its own world, Islam clearly excludes the right and possibility of putting a foreign ideology into practice on its territory. There is thus no principle of secular government, and the state must express and support the moral principles of religion, unquote. Izbegovic's immediate concern in writing the 1970 Islamic Declaration, unquote, was not in combating the communist regime in Yugoslavia, which by recognizing a Muslim nationality, unquote, had greatly facilitated the revival of a Muslim consciousness and community. Rather, he was calling for an awakening of an Islamic consciousness as the first necessary step toward eventual restoration of international Islamic unity and Islamic government wherever Muslims would constitute a majority. This is stated quite clearly, quote, emphasis on giving priority to religious and moral renewal doesn't mean that Islamic order can be realized without Islamic government. This position means that we don't start with the conquest of power, but by the conquest of men, and that Islamic regeneration is first of all an upheaval in the field of education, and only afterwards in the political field. We must be preachers first, and soldiers later, unquote. At what moment will force accompany these educational means? Again quoting, the choice of this moment is always a precise question and depends on a number of factors. One can, however, establish a general rule. The Islamic movement can and must take power as soon as it is normally and numerically strong enough not only to destroy the existing non-Islamic government, but also to construct a new Islamic government. Acting too soon is as dangerous as acting too late. Seizing power without adequate moral and psychological preparation and the indispensable minimum of strong and well-trained cadre means making a coup d'etat, not an Islamic revolution, unquote. Earlier, he specifies that, quote, an Islamic regime can be achieved only in countries where Muslims are a majority, unquote. The overthrow of the state, unquote, was perhaps nearly as distant and hypothetical for Izbegovic in Yugoslavia in 1970 as it was for communist parties in the non-communist West in the mid-20th century. The precipitation with which Izbegovic has in fact become president of a largely Muslim and potentially Islamic state is clearly due to a series of events that even a religious visionary is most unlikely to have foreseen in 1970 or even in 1983, although by then the Islamic revolution in Iran had opened new prospects. Notably, a sort of competition between Tehran and Saudi Arabia has provided Islamic movements everywhere with a lucrative rivalry for influence between oil-rich sponsors. Izbegovic's party has been notably successful in winning important political and material support from all Muslim countries, regardless of rivalries between them. Islam Between East and West was published first in the United States in 1984, at a time when Izbegovic was in jail in Yugoslavia for counter-revolutionary, unquote, activities. The book could not be published in Bosnia-Herzegovina until after he was released in a general amnesty in 1988. The book is a lengthy attempt to elaborate the ideological underpinnings of the central political argument of the Islamic Declaration. It is thus part of the intellectual preparation which Izbegovic considered necessary before proceeding to the next step of establishing Islamic government. All of Izbegovic's thinking centers on a single, simple formula. Islam is the only synthesis capable of unifying mankind's essentially dualistic existence. There are only three integral views of the world, the religious, the materialistic, and the Islamic. They reflect three elemental possibilities, conscience, nature, and man, each of them manifesting itself as Christianity, materialism, and Islam. All ideologies can be reduced to one of these three, unquote. The book proceeds to make these reductions. The method employed is to touch briefly on virtually every subject imaginable, citing a wide range of celebrated or obscure facts and authors, usually out of any clear context, in order to illustrate this simple hypothesis. Thus, assertions take the place of logical argument, repetition the place of definition. Izbegovic is not at all an analytical thinker, but a classifier. His approach is to attempt to fit everything, all philosophy and science, notably into his three preconceived categories. Diana Johnstone then goes on to quote at length from Islam Between East and West, and I'm not going to read this. I don't think it would be particularly clear to the listeners. It's characteristic of the sort of ideological mist and logical mystification that fascist doctrine usually engages in, and this is no exception. Bear in mind that this guy, as a young man, served with a Bosnian Muslim Waffen-SS division. And skipping this tortuous philosophical rambling, or pseudo-philosophical rambling would be a better way of putting it, skipping down in this article, we read, along with a dozen co-religionists, Izbegovic was arrested in still communist Yugoslavia and sentenced to prison in 1983. All were freed by a general amnesty in 1988 for counter-revolutionary activities, unquote, and seeking to transform Bosnia-Herzegovina into an ethnically pure Islamic state, unquote. The very fact that such charges were brought by a communist state, and again reiterated by, quote, nationalist, unquote, Serbs, has seemingly protected Izbegovic's writings from critical examination. From a democratic secular viewpoint, there is nothing, absolutely nothing, in either the Islamic Declaration or Islam Between East and West to justify arresting Mr. Izbegovic and putting him in prison for 5 years. The harm done by jailing people for ideas goes beyond the personal injustice suffered. The fact that Izbegovic was persecuted for his ideas has tended ever since to make any free criticism of those ideas taboo, unquote, since criticism is readily equated with endorsement of communist persecution. Unfortunately, the fear of taking the wrong side, unquote, in one way or another, has stood in the way of free and open debate regarding all the main subversive, unquote, writings that mark the ideological crisis of the Titoist regime, notably the most controversial, those of Izbegovic, Tudjman, and the Serbian Academy of Sciences and Arts. Without open debate, the prevailing tendency has been to cite such texts, often inaccurately, for polemic purposes, rather than to examine them fairly and critically. And skipping down again. Later, supporters of the Sarajevo regime dismissed any suggestion that Mr. Izbegovic might be considered an Islamic fundamentalist as gross Serbian nationalist propaganda. The question was not examined seriously, insofar as fundamentalism, unquote, can be defined as basing an entire social and political order on religion, then Mr. Izbegovic is certainly a fundamentalist, unquote. There is another aspect that deserves study, and that is the extent to which fear of the implications of the Islamic Declaration, unquote, specifically the call for an Islamic state once Muslims are a majority of the population, drove large numbers of the Orthodox and Catholic Christians of Bosnia-Herzegovina into the arms of nationalist Serb and Croat parties. This is a legitimate question that needs to be elucidated as part of the process of clarifying the causes of the conflict and working for reconciliation between communities. These last couple of sentences again. There is another aspect that deserves study, and that is the extent to which fear of the implications of the Islamic Declaration, specifically the call for an Islamic state once Muslims are a majority of the population, drove large numbers of the Orthodox and Catholic Christians of Bosnia-Herzegovina into the arms of nationalist Serb and Croat parties. This is a legitimate question that needs to be elucidated as part of the process of clarifying the causes of the conflict and working for reconciliation between communities. Indeed. And bear in mind, again, that as a young man, Izbegovic served with the Hanjar Division, a Bosnian Muslim Waffen-SS division. And bear in mind some of the other aspects of the historical background to what used to be Yugoslavia. Croatian independence was financed by a $2 billion interest-free loan arranged through the auspices of the American branch of the Knights of Malta. William Casey, by the way, a Knight of Malta, along with Alexander Haig and some others. And bear in mind that George Bush's national security advisor, Brent Scowcroft, speaks fluent Croatian. Interesting detail, and I think very significant. All of the various tapes that I've produced over the years are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They're located at P.O. Box 1179. That's in Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. The email address for Spitfire is spitfire@ix.netcom.com. That's Spitfire at ix.netcom.com. Once again, Spitfire, P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005, Spitfire at ix.netcom.com. There's a list of and description of the various tapes available from Spitfire on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. That's www.spitfirelist.com. You can listen to the original longer program that I do on my home base station, KFJC-FM, on the KFJC website. That's at www.kfjc.org. That's www.kfjc.org. Okay? And by the way, I'm on from 7 to 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Sunday night and 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time on Thursday evenings. That concludes this segment. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.